Welcome to the Valley College Connection, where John Kawai and Scott Wigand, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Valley College.
We are joined this afternoon by Raul Castillo, Executive Director of the Foundation at Los Angeles Valley College. Thank you so much for joining us, Raul.
Oh, thank you for having me, Scott. Thank you, John.
We've been wanting to talk with you for quite some time now. So we're really excited to have this opportunity and to be able to hear about your journey to Valley College and then to really dig in and get a much richer understanding of the foundation and all the different ways that it contributes to the college and the community. So with that, in our typical fashion, we like to throw out the invitation to our guests to take your story as far back as you'd like to go in terms of how you ultimately got here to Valley College. And so if that journey begins, you know, in kindergarten and you take us all the way through it, that's awesome. If you want to jump ahead a little bit, that's okay too. But it is oftentimes helpful just to hear sort of the steps along the way and sort of framing how you got here.
Yeah, well, you know, I've listened to a few of the podcasts the two of you have done. And so, I mean, I'll take you way back when. First off, I am an alumnus of Los Angeles Valley College. It has to start with just like a lot of our typical students. I mean, many families immigrated here, and my family was among them. You know, my family immigrated to the United States on, listen to this, July 4th, 1974. And I remember that first night, my dad came ahead of us and got an apartment near Echo Park. And later that night, I hear these loud explosions and popping. And I'm thinking that there was a war going on outside, but it was just a 4th of July celebration. So that's how it started for us. We moved to the San Fernando Valley in 1977. I attended a nearby Catholic school and high school called St. Genevieve High School in Panorama City. When I graduated from there, I was kind of hoping to enroll in a nearby Catholic university, but my grades just weren't up to par. So the other thing too, it would have been really, really expensive to go to that school. And so, you know, I decided that the best and most economical way to go about higher education is to attend community college, and Los Angeles Valley College wasn't far from where I grew up in Arleta.
Let me stop you or interrupt you for just a second, just wind it back a little bit, just for some more details there about that sort of experience. So where did your parents immigrate from?
The Philippines.
Philippines. Yeah. Okay. And so when your family came here, did you have other family who was already living in the area? Did you come with siblings? What was that experience like that you recall?
Yeah. So my dad came first. You know, he came here to find a job. We were actually supposed to live in Orlando, Florida. But because my dad had family in San Francisco and L.A., they convinced him, you know, you can start a living here. There's a lot of opportunities. So, you know, he got a job with Pacific Bell, which was part of the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, AT&T. And he got a part-time clerical job at the Los Angeles Times because he could type 75 words a minute. So the man worked really hard. He would get up, he would leave the house at 6 o'clock and come home at 9 o'clock at night. My mom also worked, and I have two younger siblings. One other sibling also attended Los Angeles Valley College. She went on, transferred to Cal State Northridge.
So what was the experience like when you came onto the Valley College campus?
You know, surprisingly, it was a very smooth transition for me. It started off with visiting the counseling office. Somebody had recommended to me, go visit a counselor and treat your counselor like you would a dentist or a doctor. Visit them regularly, you know. So that way they get to know you. They know about, you know, what you're pursuing. And that's what I did. And I remember the counselor that pretty much attended to me most of the time was Bruce Thomas.
Bruce.
And yeah, so that's a name from a blast from the past. And, you know, what I remembered about Bruce was he had this mullet that he wore in the mid to late 80s. So you can never forget who he was, you know. And I always joke about that with him ever since I returned to Valley College. I said, Bruce, I'll never forget who you were. You won't remember me, but you counseled me through my classes and told me what, you know, how to go about the next steps. And I told him how grateful I was to him. And he's like, You remember the mullet.
When you were being counseled by Bruce, and when you were here at the college and sort of with that transition that you made from high school to Valley College, did you have any sense of sort of your major, your future career sort of path, inclinations on what you wanted to pursue? Or were you more kind of wide open, just exploring?
You know, I was on a fence on a few things. You know, my grandparents had lived with us, and being an Asian family, you know, they encourage you to be, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. You know, my grandfather was an engineer. So I thought, okay, I guess I'll pursue that. But one of the things I found out was I'm really horrible at math. So, you know, and so I was just trying to figure things out. I just wanted to get the general courses out of the way and figure things out. And I eventually came to that and said, you know what, I have a pretty good understanding of, you know, business, economics. And I had some great instructors at Valley College that kind of helped me find my path, so to speak. An economics professor by the name of Blaine Gunn. I mean, everybody kind of made fun of him because he was kind of, other students said, kind of humdrum, but I was just fascinated by what he was teaching in class. We had talked about the emergence of the South Korean economy. And I remember going into his office asking for some help, and we ended up talking about something like that for half an hour. And I mean, he was just totally engaging. And then there's the power of speaking properly. And I learned that from a gentleman by the name of Jim Martini and Jack Sterk, who taught critical thinking classes at Valley College. And then there was the fun classes taught by Richard Raskoff. You know, the guy had a hurricane machine, a tornado machine in his classroom. I don't know if you knew that, but that was one of the things he used to show and demonstrate in his classroom. And I always remember that. And when I returned to Valley College, I saw him. I said, "You still have that tornado machine?" He goes, "Oh yeah, absolutely."
What subject did he teach?
He taught geography. I'm trying to think. I'm forgetting the name of the class, but okay. I think it was
geography. That's a great class if you can remember a lesson more than the name of the class, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you had some of these kind of, you know, legendary professors at the college with Richard Raskoff, who was just beloved by, you know, students and faculty, and Jim Martini, you know, as well. That's pretty, you know, Bruce Thomas as the counselor. What a great time to be at the school.
And when I returned to Valley College, they were still there.
Yeah.
You know, of course, they're retired now. You know, I learned about the power of writing from an English professor named John Zunes. The guy really challenged you. You know, I never got an A in his class, but I always challenged him. I mean, why did you do this way? Well, maybe you can change your style to doing this. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about this. So he taught me that, you know, writing, having technical writing skills as well as creative writing skills are very important in any path that you take. So these are things, these are people that, you know, really, you know, it resonated with me. I connected with them. And there are a number of other folks that I'm forgetting to mention. I mentioned that I was horrible in math. I had Glenn Padgett.
Oh, he's a
as my
man.
Professor.
He told me my first day when I came to Valley College, I walked in and he came up to me and said, "This is my dream job." My dream job was to teach math with my mentor, who was at Valley College. And he said, "This is my dream job." And then, you know, to be met on your first day, the first person to say, for a guy who says, "This is a great job, you're going to have a wonderful career here, you know, welcome." That was just That's a great awesome. Way to start my career here.
Yeah.
It's a lovely man. And the thing that was striking was that he has MS and he was a paraplegic. He was in a wheelchair, right?
Yeah. Back then, you know, when we're talking about the 80s, he always used to come in with these cargo shorts and sandals and a Hawaiian shirt. That was Glenn. I struggled in his class, but, you know, the guy was nothing but encouraging. And I think a lot of the professors were that way. Another class I struggled with was business law with Dr. Mary Ellen Pangonis. She's long passed, but she was there when I retired. My assistant introduced me to her, and I said, "Oh man, this is the tough teacher that I had. And one of the things I remember when I returned was she was such a sweet lady, but a very tough teacher. And when I saw her again, she said, "Oh, it's so nice to meet you. I heard that you were in one of my classes." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I was in business law one." I says, "How did you do?" And then my head just went down. And I said, I believe I got a C or C minus in your class." And, you know, she looked at me and I thought she was kind of giving me the once over and looking, you know, up and down at me. And she says, "Well, you probably worked hard for that C or C minus." I'm like, "What?" And she says, "Let me explain. Let me guess. Were you working when you were going to Valley College?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Let me guess, 25 to 30 hours a week." He says, "You look like a very sharp and intelligent guy. And my classes weren't a picnic." I said, "Yes, they're tough." She said, you probably, given what your circumstances are, you deserve that C." And then she says, "Let me further explain. There are people that have received A's in my class and I knew they didn't deserve it." And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Oh, you know, I couldn't prove it, but I knew that they didn't deserve that A," meaning suggesting that there were some students who were cheating and ended up getting the A because that's how she had to do it. That was my reintroduction to Dr. Pangonis. In her own way, was encouraging me. And, you know, she ended up being one of our more generous donors to the Valley College Foundation. You know, she asked me a lot of tough questions as the executive director. And part of my job is to gain folks' trust before they make those very generous donations. So, yeah, nothing but praise for the folks who taught me at Valley College. I ended up receiving a degree in economics, an associate's degree in economics. Bruce Thomas told me that you're eligible for one or two degrees. And I said, "Which ones?" And he says, "Can I have either economics or business?" And I said, "Can't I have both?" He says, "No, you can only choose one." So later on, when I return, I talked to him about that. And he says, "You know what? I think you can actually receive both of them."
Well, Ron, let me ask you this. How did you find education a two-way street? And there are some people that you talk about education, like, "How was college?" And I was like, "Yeah, it was okay." And then there are other people who talk about it, and it was a very cherished moment. And you could tell sort of as we go through these lists of teachers that have touched you, it wasn't the grade that touched you, but the person that touched you. What do you think from your side created this really strong relationship with these teachers in that you felt so moved? Like, what characteristics or what did you do on your side that made this experience so valuable and rich?
So back in the 80s, I don't think I appreciated those people as much as I do today. I was a 19-year-old kid, and I just needed to transfer. But the thing about those relationships was, for some reason, after so many years, I still remembered it. You know, I'm sure that there were other instructors there that I had that were terrific. But those folks that I just mentioned to you, they just stayed in my head even when I returned to Valley College. The third day I started as executive director, Jim Martini walks in, and first thing he says to me, "Hey, I heard that you were in my class." And he said, "Why on earth would you come back to this place?" And of course, you know, he was kidding, of course, but that was a personality of Jim Martini I remembered, you know, back in the 80s. And, you know, like the two of you said, Raskoff, Martini, folks like that, they just resonated. They connected well with the students, you know, right off the bat. And I don't know if it's their humor, you know, or they were just gifted with that connection. But I would surmise to say that, you know, anybody who's teaching at Valley College has that gift of connecting to the students. And that's why I appreciate, you know, the work that, you know, the two of you do, because what you say and do in class, you know, it may not feel like it at times, but you do make that connection with them. And You know, there's so many Valley College alumnus that I have spoken with over the years. And I asked them, you know, did you have a great experience at Valley College? 99% of them said yes. And they always go back to a certain professor, you know, that spoke to them.
So what happened after you left Valley College? Did you transfer somewhere or?
I did. I attempted to go to Cal State Northridge. I was accepted there, but when I went there, turns out all the classes were full. So, and it was the same way at Long Beach State, San Diego State, San Francisco State. And finally, there was this small Cal State in Carson called Cal State Dominguez Hills. And I went down there, spoke with a counselor. I must have listed like 18 or so courses. And the guy just looked at me really funny. He goes, you have 18 classes here. And I said, yeah, which ones are available? And he says, well, all of them are available. So that's where I ended up transferring. I ultimately received a degree in business marketing. But my senior year, I was hired as a marketing intern for the Alumni Association. And I was working in what the university is called the development office at the university. So the development office is involved with a lot of the fundraising activities. And so that's where things kind of turned around for me. Yes, I was going to be graduating with a business marketing degree, but I was just really drawn to the work that the folks at the university were doing as it relates to alumni relations, developing those relationships, raising money. I mean, my boss at the time, she says, you know, you're pretty good at this. I said, good at what? Talking to people, talking about the university, the needs of the university. You're making that connection. You're involved with this club and that fraternity, and you're doing these fundraising events. Have you ever thought about a career in this? And I just kind of looked at her and scoffed. I mean, you mean fundraising? And she says, yeah, you can actually make a pretty good career. And the thing about it, it's a relatively new industry. And then I chuckled, and she says, what's so funny? I said, I just never really thought of it, fundraising as a career. Goes, well, what have you always thought about it? And I said, well, I remember when I was a kid going door to door with a milk carton in my hand, you know, March of Dimes, doing those kind of things. But then I remembered, you know, when I was a senior in high school, I was doing, you know, we had to do 40 hours of what they call it Christian service hours, but it was community service hours. They wanted us to volunteer at a charitable organization and, you know, and help out. And I remember doing that in high school with an organization that you folks may be aware of called MEND, Meet Each Need with Dignity. It's a really great organization here in the San Fernando Valley. And then I said, yeah, I guess I'd be interested in it. And my boss, Kathy, then set up a series of informational interviews for me that pretty much made me decide this is what I want to do with my career. I met with a lady named Ann Llewellyn, who was the executive director of the Norton Foundation. This is Peter Norton's foundation of Norton Antivirus. Okay. Yeah, I didn't meet Peter himself, but I met Ann Llewellyn, the executive director of his foundation, who her career was as an attorney, and she became his executive director. And she asked me these really, really cool questions about, so tell me, I've read a little bit about your resume. I see here you're part of a fraternity that raised $8,000 for the local community rape crisis hotline. You know, why did you guys decide to do that? And I explained to her, I said, well, one of the sisters of our fraternity brothers, you know, was raped. And so she was like a sister to all of us. She says, I think that's great that you guys are doing that, but did you guys try to tell that? I said, no, we didn't want to tell that personal story. But she was telling me, he goes, here's a fraternity raising money for a rape crisis hotline. And she says, it's kind of like ironic, but really cool in a good sense. And she says, you ran this comedy show fundraiser. I said, yeah, what was your budget? I said, well, about 3,000 bucks. That's how much it cost to put it on. You netted about, what, 6,000 bucks? I said, yeah, around that. So she kind of held a mirror to my face and said, you know, the things that you just described to me, are some, if not a lot, of the stuff that I'm currently doing, but on a much larger scale. And so her, along with a number of other folks that I met with, just really inspired me to say, I think this is the right path for me to take. Now, conversely, I had a fraternity brother who also wanted me to get into fundraising too, but it wasn't charitable fundraising, it was political fundraising. And so there's a vast difference in the two. One is more community and service oriented, while the other is more for, and this is just my two cents, power and gain, you know. So it was a no-brainer for me. My frat brother told me, you can make a pretty good living, a lot of money doing this. And I said, yeah, and I was on the fence. I was just like, okay, what's my heart telling me? And I said, okay, I think this is what I want to pursue. And so that's how my path to the fundraising and nonprofit industry, I was directed.
So how have you seen the process change? Because you had originally talked about the March of Dimes, right? And older people know March of Dimes at UNICEF, and younger students won't know what that means. What that means is that in grammar school, we gave kids a box. And then we said, walk around your neighborhood, knock on the door on strangers, and ask them for a coin, and let them put it in your box. Like, the reason why we would never do that again.
It is... Nowadays, you cannot do that, with exception, you know, of maybe, well, not even the Girl Scouts go door to door anymore. You see them parked in front of a supermarket or something with their mom selling cookies. But before, they used to go door to door and say, you know, would you like to buy a box of cookies? I think those days are gone, but there are still, for young people, I think, you know, today's young people, you know, start their philanthropy off at a very young age. Girl Scouts is a great organization that teaches leadership. It talks about ways to conduct business, public relations, marketing. So that's just an example of an organization. But you're right, John. I mean, gone are the days where you can go door to door with a milk carton, you know, in your hands, and asking for a donation, because on the milk carton says March of Dimes, right? And people would put their dime in there. You know, speaking of Glenn Padgett, I went door to door pledging to read books for the Multiple Sclerosis Society. It's very different from today, but in meeting with those folks that I mentioned to you, I found out that fundraising was a science. And a lot of the elements that I was learning in school, like marketing, public relations, business, you needed to have those skills in order to be successful in this industry. And so the thing about that was, I was a senior in college. I was getting a business marketing degree. Who's going to hire me, you know, right out of college to do some fundraising? I needed to build some credentials. So first thing I wanted to do was find a job, you know, out of college. So I used my degree. I started working for a sports public relations and marketing firm to start, right? And actually, my boss is what, you know, I moved back to the Valley, and my boss ended up being an LAVC alumnus. His name is Steve Brenner, who, you know, him and his partner, Toby Zweichel, you know, hired me. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm really trying to get into the nonprofit industry, but we'll help you guys in any way until that time. And so worked there for about a year, and it was a fun gig too. I mean, I got to do traveling, did golf tournaments, boxing in Vegas, did some traveling, met some celebrity athletes, but my heart was still in the nonprofit arena. And one day I got a call from one of those individuals who I interviewed with, Doug Stewart. And he says, listen, I know that you're working for the PR firm, but I remember our discussion, and I just got a job as director of development at UCLA Neurosciences. And I want you to work for me as my administrative assistant. And so he premised it by saying, before you say no to me, I'll tell you this, it's not just any administrative assistant position. I will teach you everything you need to know to be successful in this industry. And so that was my next job. And he showed me, and true to his word, he showed me everything. We did these small receptions, you had some high level donors. And, you know, he would show me simple things like putting my name tag, you know, on my right side. And I said, why? Because you're going to shake with your right hand and you want to pull them close to you so they can read your name and you can read theirs. Told me how to hold a teacup with hors d'oeuvres so you can still mingle around and you know, shake people's hands. Little things like that. But most of all, it was just, I came to learn at UCLA that it's a major fundraising machine. And the people that worked there all had built relationships with people. And they built it from the first floor working their way up. And it's all about building trust, making sure you inform, you know, those prospective donors that UCLA can be entrusted, you know, with their generosity. And that's the attitude I've taken at Valley College. So over the course of the years, I've worked really hard to build those relationships. Many of them are folks at Valley College, because one of the things I decided to do was I need to look in our own backyard to see who would be able to support the foundation and our mission. Started at UCLA, as far as I'm concerned. And then after that, I worked for the Entertainment Industry Foundation, the Greater Los Angeles Zoo Association. And then before coming to Valley College, I worked for the Music Center in Los Angeles. So raised money for their educational program, secured sponsorships for the dance components. And that was a very fun job to do as well. And many people often ask me, goes, why did you leave the Music Center? I said, well, I found a bigger calling at Valley College as its executive director.
When you came to Valley College, what was happening with the foundation? And then what was your vision for where you wanted to take the foundation?
That's a great question, John. So I need to talk a little bit about where the foundation was before I came. So the story goes, the foundation was originally started in 1971 by a group of folks who worked at Valley College, and they formed a ladies' high tea club, if you can believe that, right? So every afternoon, you know, or Thursday or Friday afternoon, the ladies would get together, have their high tea. But one of the things that they did, to their credit, was secure what's called a 501c3 designation by the Department of Treasury to make them a charitable organization. This allowed them to raise money, and that's what they did. They did very grassroots type of fundraising activity, like a newspaper drives, donut sales. And in a year, they probably, you know, raise about $1,500, $2,000. They turned around, and John, this is going back to what a lot of folks think about the foundation, is they turned around and awarded scholarships for students. Now, students back then, they didn't pay any student fees or tuition to the college, but they did have to pay for books. And, you know, price tag on books are pretty up there. And it was just that way in, you know, the 70s. And so that's what they did. And then later on, the club dissolved, and I don't know why, but the college president at that time, Alice Thurston, said, you know, we should try to keep this group, their 501c3 charter in place. And so that's what they did. And it was, the organization was renamed the Patrons Association. They continued to do the same activities, newspaper drives, those small fundraising activities. But it wasn't until 1988 when an associate dean by the name of George Kopolis became part of the Patrons Association and actually became, there wasn't a director or an executive director, but he was the associate dean of the foundation. And so one of the things George did was, instead of just keeping this to Valley College, let's open it up to the community. So George was a member of Rotary. He invited Rotary members to become members of the Patrons Board, then took the fundraising activity a next level. Next thing you know, they're raising $10,000 annually. Again, the mission was to award scholarships, but they also started helping a couple of programs here and there doing that. George retired a few years later, and in 1994, the Dean of Fine Arts, Dennis Reed, took over for George, and Dennis took the Patrons Association to that next level by having big time events, big fundraising events. The most well known, that if anybody's been around more than 20 years, is the Vegas Knights, where they would raise, you know, they would raise funds for the Patrons Association. Dennis wanted to get back into the academic side of things, and he suggested to the college president, who was Tyree Weeder, as well as the foundation board, you know what? You need to bring in somebody who has some credentials and knows exactly where they want to take the foundation board and direct the board of directors, as well as guide the college president and what that can be. And so in 2001, I interviewed for the job, met with Tyree. There was a panel of folks who interviewed me. And I came in, I think, with a lot of grandiose ideas, because I was thinking Valley College. I was thinking of UCLA and Cal State Dominguez Hills. But I quickly realized that community college fundraising versus four-year university fundraising are apples and oranges. They're very, very different. They like the picture that I painted as far as a 3 to 5 year plan for Valley College and its fundraising activity and the foundation. But then I turned around and it was my turn to ask the questions. And I said, so how big is my team? Am I going to have a director of planned giving? Am I going to have a marketing person? Am I going to have a director of alumni relations? And the panel of seven folks, and I kid you not, they all kind of succinctly looked down at the table, you know, and Dennis Reed was among those. And he says, well, Raul, it's basically going to be you, an administrative assistant, and maybe a couple of student workers. And at that point, I realized, okay, I need to backtrack here. So the model I had originally had painted for the interview panel was that of a four-year university. Now, at a four-year university, just in the fundraising department or development program alone, and I'll show an example, maybe CSUN, you probably have 30 or 40 professionals with probably a couple of administrative support for each and every one of them for different departments in the area. So at Valley College, it would just be me as the lone professional. And so the model that I then started painting was that of a grassroots organization, a service organization that was just trying to get off the ground. I think the folks appreciated that. I told them, you know, we're not going to do this in the 3 to 5 years. Instead, this is what I hope to accomplish within 3 years. And then maybe we can start building on these things. Tyree Weeder, when I met her for my second interview, I think she appreciated that, as opposed to somebody who came in with a lot of promises. I told her what the hurdles would be, but I also told her what my expectations would be as far as Valley College was concerned, and I wanted to build upon that. And so to this day, I continue to be grateful to Tyree for selecting me. And I've always told her, I said, you know, boss, I hope I've made you proud. You know, I hope we've checked off a lot of your boxes. And she always smiles with me like a proud mother hen.
What were the commitments that you were asking Valley College to make to you?
This is one of those touchy things, because I had set these benchmarks at a certain timeline, and I had, one of the things I wanted to do was build capacity. Now, every time that time came, the college was always in a really tough situation. So in 2007, 2008, Tyree retires, Dr. Weeder retires. Sue Collier steps in amidst a major budget crisis at Valley College, not just for Valley College, it was throughout the whole district. I mean, we were talking about furloughs at that time, and, you know, cutting budgets and not hiring positions. It was never the right time to be able to do that. But given the adversity, you know, the hurdles that I think our foundation has overcome a lot, and it's not because of me, but because there have been supportive folks on the campus. I've always had terrific members of our foundation board that have been nothing but supportive and engaged, you know, with our community and trying to get them involved with the goal of our foundation. When I started in 2001, foundation's assets were right at around close to $300,000. And one of the things Tyree asked me was, if there was one thing that's going to be your charge as executive director, what would it be? And I was quick to respond saying, build our endowments. And she says, what endowments? And I said, exactly. For those of you folks who don't know what an endowment is, it's where you raise funds, but you don't spend it. Instead, your organization invests it into a portfolio, an investment portfolio. And then the earnings that it makes through interest and dividends or market gains or losses, that's what you would use to support the college and the students. So we only had one, maybe two endowments within the foundation, and it was just a little over $100,000. So one third of our assets were endowed. And I said, we need to build that, because if you want the foundation to be along for a long, long time, we need to provide perpetual funds. And that's going to come by way of endowments. There's a story that I heard about, I don't know if it's necessarily true, but way back when, Benjamin Franklin donated a couple of $1,000s to Yale and Harvard. If you were to look up what Yale and Harvard's endowments total, it's in the billions of dollars.
Over the tenure of the last, you know, 20 years now that you've been the executive director, what are some of the other accomplishments or contributions that you're most proud of the work that you feel as though that, yes, you know, this has really moved the vision forward and this has been really good for the college?
One of the things I'm proud of for the foundation is that we have been able to build the endowments. I told my foundation board of directors back then, this is what we need to work on. And a couple of folks understood how an endowment works. They were part of committees or boards working with the likes of Pepperdine, UCLA, USC. So they know how an endowment works, but they also realized that it's going to take a lot of work. Our assets were barely $300,000. The first thing was to try to get a financial manager to manage our assets. They usually don't pick up organizational clients unless their assets are $1 million, and we weren't there. We actually had to persuade or sell prospects on this is why you want us as a client, and shared with them our visions. And we were successful to do that because of a couple of board members who helped open doors to allow us to do that. And once that was set in place, then I was able to go back and this, mind you, I'm like 2 or 3 years into the job. I was able to go back to folks like Dr. Mary Ellen Pangonis, who asked me those tough questions, like, do you guys have an investment portfolio that's managed by somebody, or do you guys manage it? Who are they? What are your visions? She was asking all these really, really good questions. And I said, we're almost there. And when we were there, I went back to her and said, guess what, Dr. Pangonis, we have our investment manager. And so one of the first things she did was she pulled a checkbook out of her purse and, you know, wrote me a check. And then Richard Raskoff one day came into my office and he had a friend with him. He had Professor Joe Nordman, a retired professor of chemistry, one of the founding faculty at LA Valley College. So Professor Joe Nordman came in my office escorted by Richard Raskoff and introduces Professor Nordman to me. And Professor Nordman said, you know, I've been thinking about giving to the Patrons Association. And I told Professor Nordman, you know what, we're planning on changing that name. And he says, oh, to what? I said, LAVC Foundation. Because nobody knew why we had that name. But Professor Nordman, you know, had been following. He had made small donations throughout the years. He retired in 1978. He made his money, a lot of his money, not only at Valley College, but in real estate investment. And it moved up to Northern California, Pacific Grove, and amassed a lot of, you know, wealth. And so he was asking me those same tough questions that Dr. Pangonis did. And he says, who's your financial manager? And I said, it's Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney. And then he says, really? That's who I invest with. And so, like Dr. Mary Ellen Pangonis, you know, he had his checkbook in his back pocket and he says, I want to do a chemistry assistantship. Is that something you can, you know, facilitate for me? I said, absolutely. And so can we endow it? I said, absolutely. And so he started off with a check, but in the preceding years, he would make gifts of stock to Valley College totaling anywhere between $25,000 to $30,000 a year to benefit K chemistry assistantship. And Professor Norman passed away in 2015, but his cumulative gift to the foundation is over $1 million, and that's in his endowment. That same endowment creates about $25,000 that provides tutors on campus. Scott, you might be aware of that. You know, Haley Lucas has that. It's focused not only for chemistry but biology, and so that's what that endowment does. Dr. Pangonis, she passed away in 2015, I believe, as well. You know, her total life giving was over $100,000 to the foundation that we're, you know, really grateful for. Setting things up like our endowments, our investment portfolio, started paving the way for folks to be more engaged with Valley College, because they wanted to make sure, first of all, that we were structurally sound, we were trustworthy, and that we would facilitate their wish. And so with Professor Nordman, it was the chemistry biology assistantship. Dr. Pangonis, it was, you know, a business scholarship that we've been awarding, you know, since they started it. And if you were to fast forward today, I mentioned that our assets were right around $300,000 in 2001. Our assets are right at around $8.5 million today, and $6.5 million of that are endowed. So I kind of hope we would be at a higher place, but given the circumstances, you know, where we're at with, you know, a staff, I think we've really come a long ways. There have been a number of generous folks, and you talk about other highlights, you know, in the last 20 years. We facilitated a donation from J.H. Schneider for $1.5 million that built the Family Resource Center on campus. I talked about Professor Nordman's. We received a $500,000 gift that was actually predates me, but it didn't come around until 2012 from the Jewish Community Foundation, from a gift from Bell and Harry Krupnik. Harry Krupnik was a former dean here at Valley College. He just wanted to make sure that the foundation was in a stable place before he instructed the Jewish Community Foundation to make the donation. And so that donation has also been endowed to benefit the media arts program here on our campus. That generates about, you know, anywhere between $13,000 to $15,000 a year that the department uses to purchase equipment. Bell and Harry's name are on the television studio if you walk by it. A more recent news that we have, we were just notified from one of our longtime generous supporters had passed away. Her name was Roz Heyman. She used to be on our foundation board from 1997 to 1998, had continued to support the foundation after, you know, she stepped down. She recently passed away, and we've been notified by her estate and trust that the foundation is going to be a beneficiary of a $2 million gift. And she knew the struggles of our foundation from an operations standpoint. So she said, you know, Raul, she says, before I pass, just please tell me that you're going to be able to facilitate my request. And I said, what's that, Roz? And she says, please name a building after my beloved Max. Max L. Heyman was a history professor here at Valley College. I think he retired in the mid-1980s. And so we're working to name a building here on campus after Max Heyman, with a generous gift from his wife, Roz, who just passed away at the age of 94. If you're talking about my legacy, my legacy is that I've been privileged to work at Valley College. After I leave Valley College, I feel strongly that work will continue to be there. I think we can build upon what's already been laid, because there's always room for growth. There's always room for growth. I mean, our foundation could be even more larger. We have a number of new buildings on campus. There are naming opportunities there. I'm trying to encourage folks, open your Rolodex. Let me know if you know somebody who is philanthropic, understands or would like to understand, you know, the plight of the community colleges. because we have a terrific college at LA Valley College. Let's talk about the programs like the Writing Center. Let's talk about the math program that's very plugged into STEM programs and activities here on campus. And let's try to bring in corporations, other nonprofit organizations, private foundations, or that individual that may want or be interested in supporting those things. One of the things I encourage folks to do is, if you identify folks who are looking to be generous and support, why not talk about Valley College? And you're not asking them for money. You're just talking about the story of Valley College and what its needs are, okay? A lot of people feel very uncomfortable about asking for money. I've never taken my position as asking for money, but rather telling the story of the organization that I work with. And nothing has made me more proud to talk about the story of Valley College. As a former student and an alumnus, it's very easy for me to talk about Valley College. I'm always encouraging other alumni to think about supporting Valley College. You know, we have an Alumni and Friends Association here on campus, but it's what I would call your template alumni association. You know, you sign up for it for about $30 a year. You get discount coupons to the amusement parks. You get, you have 1 year library privileges. And I ask people, that I run into in the community that are former students or alumni, I chide with them and say, hey, you should join the Alumni Association at Valley College. And they kind of look at me weird, and they would, and there's nothing malicious about what they say. They just say, well, I'm already a member at USC, And I remind them, I said, but you just told me you had a great experience at Valley College, and Valley College was your first college. So there's this reality that sets in, like, you're right. You know, that $30 would probably mean more to Valley College than it does to USC. And other folks would say, why should I give to Valley College versus USC? I said, your donation, your support would go a long way at Valley College. I said, the other thing I would say is, why would you bring sand to a beach?
I mean, that's the whole Malcolm Gladwell argument. Like, it's insane to donate these giant sums of money to Yale and Harvard when they have so much money they can't possibly spend it.
And think about it. Our political leadership is encouraging everybody to go to a community college, right? But there never seems to be enough financial support coming in by way of the state to our community colleges. And so one of the things I'm asking them is, listen, if you're going to send our kids our way, which is great, encourage folks, that the big players, to also be philanthropic and support our community colleges as well. And so that's been my mission since I've been here. I think there's still a long ways. We're, organizationally, we're nothing like the four-year universities, like a CSUN, USC, or UCLA. But that's what we aspire to be. A number of community colleges here in the state of California are pretty much there. They have what's called an advancement model, is what they refer to it, meaning a model of fundraising and development to help their community college, structured very similarly to that of a four-year institution. But out of the 113 community colleges, I would say, probably maybe 3/4 have a foundation. And then out of that, probably 40% have an active, operating foundations. Others are really just trying to struggle along. Just look at our district alone. If you were to ask anybody within the district who are the top foundations in the district, it would be City, East, and us. And I'm not bragging. I mean, that's the truth. And then you have other foundations that are just struggling to get off the ground and do some sort of fundraising activity. And then others that are just, non-existent. I mean, being run out of president's office. And that's not the way this is set up. I'm just happy that Valley College and the leadership back then invested in a person like me, I was able to share my vision with them, and made a lot, it made sense to them, so much so that they entrusted me with leading the foundation. And I'm just really fortunate and privileged to still be here, working for the foundation. One of the things, as far as a personal takeaway, if there's anything that I've really appreciated during my time here, is, and this was nothing I had anticipated coming in, is learning about our students. You know, they would come in saying, "Mr. Castillo, I'd like to apply for a scholarship." So one of the things I would do way back when was ask them a little bit about themselves. And I'm hearing a very similar story, that story being mine. You know, it's a struggle financially. These are my dreams. These are my goals. This is what I want to do. But I've also had to listen to things that I didn't have to deal with as a student. One is food insecurity, homelessness. Guys, these are big, important things that we need to try to help our students with. And our foundation has been, working with folks on campus. I'm sure you've heard of Helping Hands program, headed by Ellie Rabani and a committee of folks on campus to help our, to help our students out with food insecurity. Our current president, Dr. Barry Gribbins, he's been very supportive and wants to engage our food pantry again. These things are important because it helps our student in succeeding, in completing, trying to attain their academic goals here. And hopefully we can push them to the next level where they can, receive their bachelor's degree and in turn, find jobs and be a contributor to society. And yeah, I'm hoping down the road they become very, very successful so I can knock on their door and take them out to lunch and say, "How about it? Why don't you start a scholarship at Valley College?" So yeah, a lot of people laugh at that. But it's not far from the truth. I mean, I remember in 2002 we awarded a scholarship to this young lady who ended up transferring to Berkeley, and then in 2012 she stopped by our office and said, "Wow, I finally found your office." And she told me who she was, and she says, "I received a $250 scholarship back in 2002 from the foundation." And then she pulls a check out of her purse and she says, "I hope this is enough." And it was a $500 check. And she says, "Wow." I said, "That's incredible." And she says, "I know it's not a lot, but as my career takes off," because she says she was an engineer, I like to be able to give more. I said, "This is very generous of you." And you know what she told me? She says, "I'm just paying it forward." I mean, that stuff is priceless, guys. And I get to be a part of that.
I don't know if there would be any person better to serve in the capacity than you, Raul. The time that you've been at the college and you sharing your story, it's easy to sort of see now from what your experience was like as a student with all the connections you made with the faculty here and then at your time at Cal State Dominguez and the connections that you made with your mentors there, that there's a characteristic about you as an individual that endears and brings forward relationships and wanting to work with you. And as you said, the type of work that you do is really built upon trust. It's built upon integrity. And you are somebody who just embodies those characteristics in such a powerful way that it's easy to sort of see the trajectory of sort of your path and what you've brought to the college now that you've been here for 20 years. And so you've done just such an amazing service to the college and to the community. And it's just been a real privilege to sit down and to hear your story this afternoon. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for sharing your time this afternoon, but thank you for everything that you've done for the college, for Valley College. The way you talk about students, the way you understand sort of the struggles that they've been through, the way you talk about the reverence for the professors here, it's all the things that make Valley College a very unique and special place. Thank you so much, Raul.
Thank you. I'm just so humbled by your story. I mean, it's such a honor to have someone who can go to people to say, I want you to share the joy of what we do here at Valley College, right? I want you to share the honor of these stories and what we do, and I want you to be a part of our student lives. And for to be someone like that, to say, I'm going to bridge people who have more to give to people who have needs, and to do it in a way in which everyone feels advantaged, you know, or people feel really good about receiving and also good about giving. It's a great life's work. So thank you so much.
Couldn't have said that better, John. You really captured it there. I guess one of the questions might be for us now, as we kind of wrap it up here, is, and maybe this is an obvious one, but what's the best way to contact you, Raul? How do people connect with the foundation at Valley College? If they want to find out more, how to contribute more about the foundation, what do you recommend? Is it our website? Is there an email address?
All of the above, Scott. You can call us. Rania Waters is my colleague in the foundation office, as well as Jade Martinez, and they can be reached at 818-947-2618. You know, if you just have any questions about, you know, what your thoughts are as far as, you know, you want to start a scholarship, we can certainly do that. You want to support the math department, the writing center on campus, we can help facilitate that. That's what the mission of our foundation is. We're also online at www.lavcfoundation.org. That's different from the Valley College website, which is lavc.edu. Again, that's www.lavcfoundation.org. You can make an online donation and designate your support for programs such as the Helping Hands programs that helps, you know, our students who have food insecurities, who are homeless or just need clothing, to the Family Resource Center on campus. We can certainly, you know, use the support. If there's anybody who's been very supportive, it's the folks at Valley College, the faculty as well as the staff. You know, they all do their you know, they have their pet areas, of course, of giving, and that's certainly fine. But we also want to raise what we call unrestricted dollars to give us the flexibility in dishing out the monies where it's needed most on campus. So a lot of you participate with employee payroll giving. That campaign is going to be launched usually in August, usually on faculty opening day. So if, you know, by the time you listen to this, hopefully you can participate if you haven't already. And to those who have been supporting the foundation, again, thank you for your kind generosity. You know, I really do appreciate it, and just want to thank you on behalf of myself and our foundation board.
Wow, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Me too. Thank you so much, Raul. It's really, really wonderful afternoon to sit down and to talk with you about this. Thank you so much for sharing.
The Valley College Connection podcast is dedicated to sharing the dynamics of our community and supporting the fascinating lives of students, faculty, and those in pursuit of college life information. The Valley College Connection podcast is produced by KVCM and supported by the LAVC Academic Resource Center. The content heard on this podcast does not reflect the faculty, staff, and students of Los Angeles Valley College. Yeah.